regulation that's saying if you're in one city you can raise money, but if you're in another city you can't. I have constitutional concerns with this statute.
State lawmakers may have trouble raising campaign money during the special session. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, maritime unions endorse Don Young's challenger.
And when you look at the measure and the volume of political contributions by Edison Schwest, it's simply outrageous.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The MBA program at Alaska Pacific University provides working professionals an educational pathway to career advancement. Through APU's hybrid course format of online and campus-based courses, students can focus on healthcare, finance, technology, and strategic leadership options. Apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
The legislature will gather in Juneau on July 11th for its second special session this year, but it might not be there for long. Lawmakers are talking about adjourning in Juneau and calling the legislature's own special session in Anchorage. Some say it will be convenient and save money, but it will also pose an obstacle for Anchorage legislators running for re-election. That's because state law bars them from raising campaign funds in the municipality where there's a special session. Andrew Kitchenman of APRN and KTOO in Juneau reports.
Governor Bill Walker wanted lawmakers to return to Juneau to address legislation restructuring permanent fund earnings. The legislature could also address raising taxes and changing oil and gas taxes. After having failed to address some of these issues in the last special session, many lawmakers aren't eager to spend another 30 days in the capital city. But wherever lawmakers convene will impact local campaigns. The law says legislators and legislative employees can't solicit or accept election contributions in either Juneau or any other municipality in which a special session is held. West Anchorage Democrat Matt Klayman questions whether the law is constitutional. He faces Republican Marilyn Stewart in the general election.
We should not be making fundraising calls from the Capitol building, but I'm not certain that constitutional freedom of association and freedom of speech protections make the regulation that's saying if you're in one city you can raise money, but if you're in another city you can't. I have constitutional concerns with this statute.
Klayman, who's a lawyer, says he may seek legal counsel and ask the Alaska Public Offices Commission and the Attorney General's office about the law. He hasn't made fundraising plans for the July 11th to August 11th time period. Some legislators who support moving the special session to Anchorage are resigned to the effect it will have on their fundraising. Representative Craig Johnson is running against Jeffrey Landfield and Natasha von Imhoff in the August 16th primary to replace Liesl McGuire in the Senate district stretching from Midtown to South Anchorage. He supports holding a special session in Anchorage and doesn't object to the fundraising ban.
It's much easier to have people come down and testify. So I think access to the process outweighs anything as it comes to my reelection or my ability to raise money on a personal level.
It's a view shared by Eagle River Republican Laura Reinbold, who faces Crystal Kennedy in the primary. Reinbold notes that holding the session in Anchorage would still allow more time to campaign, even if she can't fundraise.
It's a peak election time, which would also be, you know, in combination with legislative time, so, you know, it would definitely inhibit our ability to fundraise in our key community. However, I still think it's worth it to not be able to fundraise so we can be in our own communities with our people and sleeping in our own beds. That is worth a lot to me.
Representative Bob Lynn faces Chris Birch in the Republican primary to represent the areas of Huffman and Lower Hillside. He says having the special session in Anchorage would both improve public access and save transportation and per diem expenses for more lawmakers.
Of course, it's a concern not raising, being able to raise money during these periods of time. But the first concern has to be trying to deal with what the governor's put before us.
Senate President Kevin Meyer, who represents South Anchorage, doesn't face an election this year. He says there are enough votes in the Senate to move the location, And he says the fundraising ban could actually help the session, adding that legislators' first concern must be on representing voters.
Well, it's a concern, but my hope is that maybe we would get down to business and get done sooner if that prohibited folks from getting money.
It's not clear if there are enough votes in the House to change the special session's location. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
A judge ruled today the House can't continue an appeal of Governor Bill Walker's decision to expand Medicaid. This could be a fatal blow to the attempt to reverse the expansion. Superior Court Judge Frank Fifner concluded the House can't step in for the Legislative Council in appealing the lawsuit. House members wanted to pursue the appeal, saying Walker's actions violated the separation of powers. But senators have wanted to end the appeal. Nearly 18,000 Alaskans have joined Medicaid since Walker expanded the program last year. Alaska Congressman Don Young has enjoyed a lot of support from organized labor over the years. Now, two maritime unions are endorsing his Democratic opponent. They blame Young for staying silent while a non-union company is poised to win the contract for escorting tankers through Prince William Sound. Young calls the accusation against him malarkey. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
It's with great pleasure that the Inland Boatmen's Union of the Pacific endorse Mr. Limbeck for Congress.
That's Union President Alan Cote at Steve Limbeck's campaign office this week.
He reached out to us as a candidate to express his concerns about the impending change in Valdez with the Edison Schwest slated to take over the escort and oil spill response services provided by Alyeska.
Louisiana-based Edison Schwest Offshore uses non-union labor. Its critics say switching to a new company with an imperfect safety record is a risk for Prince William Sound. Edison Schwest is also a big campaign contributor to Young. Its owner and employees have contributed more than $250,000 to Young in the past decade. Limbeck, a former general manager of Alaska Public Media, is making a campaign issue of it.
When a Louisiana company plans to replace Alaska workers and outsource jobs to Louisiana, that's an issue for Alaska and its leaders. When Congressman Don Young takes nearly $300,000 from that Louisiana company and then looks the other way, we should speak up.
Young wasn't in a chatty mood when asked about Limbeck and his newfound union support.
So what's he talking about? This is all bullshit, as you know.
Young's campaign manager, Jerry Hood, says it's weird the unions and Limbeck are pointing fingers at Young. Hood says it'd be improper for a congressman to intervene in a private industry contract award. And Hood says the unions only asked for Young's help after they complained to the press that he wasn't helping.
They met with myself and another member of Young's staff, and we politely explained to them that it violates ethics provisions and that we couldn't even ask him to do that.
Hood, a former top executive for the Alaska Teamsters, says there's no reason to assume that unions will lose out if Schwest wins the contract for the Alyeska pipeline terminal.
Schwest may be non-union now. They are going to have to employ a vast number of the existing employees. They'd be unwise if they didn't. And then the union has the opportunity to go and organize that company and put that under a union contract.
Don Marcus, president of the International Organization of Masters, Mates, and Pilots, says every Alaska official should be scrutinizing the contract change.
And when you look at the measure and the volume of political contributions in this situation by Edison Schwest, it's simply outrageous.
The two maritime unions say they've contributed only $21,000 to Young since 2000. But as a whole, transportation unions have given Young more than $800,000 over the years, dwarfing the contributions of any one company. With help from Graylin Brashear in Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Permanent Fund Corporation copes with the fallout from Brexit.
We are definitely going to be down on Monday. We are not escaping this shock.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, fueling philanthropic programs and dedicated to creating educational and professional opportunities for Alaska Native people.
Voters in the United Kingdom have decided to leave the European Union. The move shocked investors and traders around the world, and the economic fallout from the vote is already being felt in Alaska, from the price of oil to the permanent fund. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Rasha McChesney reports.
Last night, the CEO of the Permanent Fund Corporation, Angela Rodell, her chief investment officer, and a few other staff watched the votes roll in on the UK referendum, also known as Brexit. They were trying to figure out a strategy for trading on the stock market today. I called her up to get a reaction to the news that the UK is striking off on its own. Hi, Angela. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Trying to puzzle through international stock markets. So good, I think.
You and I think everybody else in the world today.
When the corporation's traders started the day at 5:30 a.m. as the U.S. markets open, they were ready to go with strategies to cope with the drop in the stock market. She says the polls have been close, but most experts expected the vote to go the other way.
And so when the vote came in the opposite direction, that's why you're seeing the tremendous sell-offs in all the global markets overnight in the foreign markets, and then again today now in the U.S. markets.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average plunged by 600 points, down about 3.39%. The corporation is responsible for managing the investment of the $52 billion permanent fund, and earnings on its investments determine the size of the PFD. While managers at the corporation were prepared this morning for the global shock, Rodell says the fund is still going to take a hit.
When we post the returns for today on Monday on the website and stuff, and when we look at the daily sort of market movements in the value of the fund, we are definitely going to be down on Monday. We are not escaping this shock.
But, Rodell says, the fund managers have confidence in the market and are using the opportunity to invest.
There are opportunities to take advantage of this dislocation and to get into arenas and take advantage of the drop in pricing so that when the short-term shock wears off and the market moves back to what we think is more normalized, we will have that gain in place then that will have countered some of the losses we're taking today.
Other Alaskan analysts have also watched the economic fallout of the voter referendum, including the Department of Revenue Assistant Chief Economist Dan Stickle. He's an 11-year veteran of the department and is involved in the oil price forecasting. He isn't too worried about the short-term impact of the 5% drop in the price of oil. He says the vote isn't likely to have a large, immediate impact on the fundamental supply and demand-driven oil market. But there could be long-term impacts on oil prices.
Oil prices, gasoline prices, natural gas prices, LNG prices, over the long term, those are all going to be determined by supply and demand. And so if the impacts of what's going on in Europe have impact on global demand, then yes, those could impact energy prices across the board.
Lower oil prices will make it more difficult for the state to address its $4 billion budget deficit. From Alaska's Energy Desk in Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
Starting August 1st, the city of Bethel will begin enforcing sales taxes on nonprofits unless the nonprofit gets an exemption, which isn't possible because one of the legal requirements doesn't exist. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
By city law, nonprofits were supposed to be paying sales taxes since 2001, but the trend didn't catch on for everyone and the city didn't enforce the change. Until now.
Just because we've done something wrong for 20 years, we should not continue to be doing it wrong.
That's city manager Ann Capella. This month, the city of Bethel sent a letter to all Bethel businesses telling them nonprofits are not exempt from city sales taxes, and any business not paying taxes will be held liable starting August 1st. Letitia Gwynn is the executive director of the nonprofit Bethel Family Clinic. She says instead of collecting, the city council should change the law and look elsewhere for revenue.
It's not a right way for people to, when they're looking for extra funds to pay bills and to meet the budget of the city, to be focusing on nonprofits.
Eileen Arnold is the executive director of the nonprofit Tundra Women's Coalition. It's a shelter and resource center for survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault. Arnold says the tax would cost the nonprofit between $15,000 to $16,000 a year and affect services.
That would make us have to choose between, you know, fixing something in our building versus providing travel for somebody to leave a domestic violence situation or food for the pantry. Like, we'd have to make really difficult decisions.
Under city law, nonprofits can be exempt from city sales taxes if they meet three criteria. Be a 501c with the IRS, use whatever it purchases for its organization, and receive Alaska revenue sharing. That last part, about having to receive Alaska revenue sharing, that bars all nonprofits from exemption, because Alaska revenue sharing, by that name, doesn't exist. Danielle Lindoff is with the Alaska Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. In an email, she says that the state has had many revenue-sharing programs, but none by the name Alaska Revenue Sharing. And even if the program did exist, Lindoff says Bethel nonprofits don't qualify for state revenue sharing anyway. City Manager Capella says even if the city's law doesn't make sense, her job is to enforce it as written.
Whether this is outdated or there's different intentions or meaning, I don't know. But so far, we've determined both legally and factually that indeed, in order to be exempt, there are three conditions that must be present. And it doesn't say one of the conditions or two of the conditions. It states all of the conditions must be present.
Capella says the city has no estimates on how much revenue it expects to collect from nonprofit sales taxes. Several nonprofits have asked Bethel City Council to amend the law before enforcement begins. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. Mount Edgecombe High School provides a curriculum rich in culture and diversity, offering over 80 courses from art to advanced engineering and with activities from native dance to kayaking. Class sizes are no larger than 30. Explore your talents and develop your dreams. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, Reflection. The shooting on June 12th at Pulse, a gay nightclub in Orlando, killed 49 people. The attack is the largest act of violence against LGBTQ people in U.S. history, and it happened as Pride events were taking place all over the country, including a two-spirit Pride reception at Juneau's Northern Light Church. KCAW's Emily Kwong was there the day before the news of the shooting broke.
The reception on June 11th was organized by artist Ricky Tagaban. He wanted to create a space for others who are two-spirited, embodying both a male and a female person. Like writer Vivian Mork. She was amazed that over 100 people came.
We gathered at the Northern Lights Church to celebrate two-spirit people, gay, native people. It was the first time I've ever known of that happening in Juneau.
Tagaban set out pilot bread and salmon spread, coffee and tea, and an open mic. Rick Peterson, president of Tlingit and Haida Central Council, talked about how the council authorized same-sex marriage in February of 2015, months before the Supreme Court ruling.
The media went crazy. He did 20 interviews in one day. And a reporter kept asking, why are you doing this?
If you've all watched the movie Princess Bride, there's a marriage scene in there. And the rabbi or whatever, he's like, love, love. And that was my answer to everything. She's like, well, why do this, love? Do this, love.
Love, it seemed, was the answer in the room that day. Other speakers reflected, some cautiously, some joyfully, on how far America has come. Gay people can get married now, come out in school. Tribal court judge Deborah O'Gara, who grew up in the era of the Stonewall riots, marveled at how the next generation has less to be afraid of.
I came out almost 40 years ago, and it was the Native community in Seattle that shunned me. And to stand here and see my community, it's great. Now I'm going to cry.
It's not perfect, she said, but every year it gets better. A lot of people came away from the reception with the same feeling. And then the next morning, it was June 12th.
Everybody, what's wrong?
I got a text message from my daughter and my two nieces. Please come and get us.
Chaos during what witnesses describe as a slaughter.
My heart sank when I saw the headlines. I so wanted it to be a horrible Facebook hoax. I didn't want it to be true, but it was.
Mork was up early that morning to catch a plane to Louisiana. James Hoagland, who was at the reception and organized Pride Week, is a well-known drag queen in Juneau. Two of his friends were performing at Pulse that night. Over the phone, he learned how one got out quickly and the other hid in a dressing room for hours, only escaping after a SWAT team removed an air conditioning unit, creating an escape portal for hostages in the wall. He identified strongly with the victims.
Young people who were just out to dance and be in community and have a good time. And that could have so easily been us.
If the Two-Spirit Pride reception affirmed safety and acceptance, waking up to Orlando violently asserted an opposite claim, that being gay in America is still dangerous. Here's Hoagland.
I've had nightmares all week about being shot on stage while performing. Somehow I had to put that aside enough to go forward with the biggest show that we've ever had in Juneau on Friday night.
That drag show, called Glitz, packed Centennial Hall with 500 people. While the shooting was, in Hoagland's words, the elephant in the room, it didn't stop people from coming out for Juneau's Pride Week. Quite the opposite.
I think people felt even more comfortable and confident being loud and proud because, you know we have an obligation to.
But after Pride Week is over, what do you do? What kind of courage do you need to get up in the morning and continue to be yourself? Hoagland's husband recently said to him, I may be killed for being gay in my lifetime. And I've made peace with that.
The victims in Orlando didn't die for no reason. I hate that they lost their lives, but the fact that they did has changed the world.
As for Mork, she spent her plane ride writing and recorded this message from her hotel room in Louisiana.
This is Pride Month, and the odds are there is a gay person near you who is hurting over this. Tell them you support them. Tell them you love them. Gunashish.
Soon after the shooting, the Juneau Assembly took hearings on an anti-discrimination ordinance for gender and sexual identity. And in a city with no gay bars, the Southeast Alaska LGBTQ Alliance, or SIGLA, plans to make the rounds at Juneau businesses with rainbow stickers for the windows. So that way, those in Juneau can be assured that if they enter a bar or restaurant, they will be treated with respect inside, no matter who they love. For AK, I'm Emily Kwong.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Katie Lawrence of Anchorage. She recently moved back to Alaska after a 12-year hiatus in Seattle.
You know, I think people who grew up in Alaska, there's two kinds of us, those who can't wait to leave and those who can't wait to come back. We were in the latter category. It's always been home. We have two kids, 13 and 4, two boys. We hike a lot. My husband's a mountaineer, so he's training to do McKinley or Denali in a couple years. summertime now, so we're biking everywhere, we're hiking. There were a lot of things to do in Seattle, and the cosmopolitan things to do, you know, going to museums, going to aquariums, that sort of thing, they were excellent, but it was always colored with that added planning that you had to do. You really couldn't do a lot on a whim, at least where we were living. We feel incredibly fortunate that we were able to get an experience, we were able to go to college and get a good experience out of state, but that we were also able to come back home. You know, we had a lot of people that were kind of skeptical when we said, yeah, we're moving back to Alaska, given the state of the budget and everything here. The people that we've talked to here, there are a lot of people that do feel invested in the future of Alaska, regardless of our ties to oil and what that looks like in the future. I think there is a young population here that sees the lifestyle benefits of living up here. And even if things get tough, even if it means a tax, there's a lot that we are willing to do, willing to pay to be able to live up here and to be able to enjoy the lifestyle that we get up here. And I think if we get the chance to speak up and talk about, you know, new inventive ways to bring new industry here, to bring new investment opportunities that are outside of what we've done in the past, I think there is so much that makes this place worthwhile. Like I said, we'll be here through thick and thin.
Katie Lawrence lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Kwong and Ammon Swenson. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Rasha McChesney in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Ron Zastro. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The Resource Basket is a training and technical assistance center helping rural communities support healthy, resilient, and culturally connected youth. Tribes and youth-serving organizations can request support, explore resources, and find opportunities at resourcebasket.org or call the team directly at 1-800-478-7227, extension 7396. This message sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program. The University of Alaska Southeast specializes in you. UAS is a learning community where your professors are mentors and friends on campus and online. uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.